Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern, every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Our guest book. That's one of the perks that I get. I've read Shadowborn by our guest today, Nicole Camp, and I was blown away. How is that for an intro, Nicole?
That is very flattering and very
I was blown away. We were talking before we came on the air, and Nicole told me it's like 170. I'm in a privileged position where I get to read things before they come out. And so she had given me an ARC, and I read that. Like, I sucked it down like a woman who'd been crawling through a desert for about 3 weeks. And trust me, I have enough fat reserves to make it through a desert for 3 weeks and probably longer. But I sucked it down like it was a Pepsi that I had seen after 3 weeks of no fluid whatsoever. Now, if you didn't expect that, Nicole, that's pretty much going to be the rest of the show.
Oh,
it was that good.
Oh, yes, I'm very, very, very flattered. Yes, I'm glad you really, really liked the book, loved the book.
Yes, I think like is really mild. And the reason why, which I also told you before, is that I got sucked into it and you didn't mess around. You broke all the so-called rules, the predictability rules, are almost what I refer to them as. Because I opened the book, I was sucked in immediately. That doesn't happen very often. And you have a male protagonist, how do you even do that? How did Rafin, the main character, come to you?
I've actually been writing the basic premises of this since probably seventh grade. I mean, I was pretty young when I came up with the idea, and it just kind of came to me. I'm going, you know what? What about a guy, and he's got kind of a special gift, and the world doesn't understand this gift, but yet what can he become with it or through it? And it just kind of worked that way over the years. I went through different versions, different names and stuff, and then gradually built on the different characters, added in different parts and stuff as I went along. There were movies that I watched and I went, oh, this is a cool idea from this movie, but I bet I could put a different twist on it. So I just kept doing that. I kept kind of tucking things away, mentally and otherwise, and going, yeah, this would work for a story later on. So
maybe that's how you did it, because I've been trying since you sent me that ARC, I've been trying to put my finger on what it is that sucked me in so quickly. And I can tell our listening audience, when they talk about voice, you hear all the time, if you're an aspiring author, if you're a published author, voice, 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 that's what they tell you. If you're going a literary agent route, they always say, they talk about voice and they say, well, I can't really describe it. It's something you know when you see. Well, you have voice to spare. That's the only explanation I can come up with, is the voice of Rafin is so authentic. And also, I think you're selling yourself short, because the character himself, he's not human, but he's not a vampire. He's not a werewolf. He's actually from another world. He has one of the most fascinating backstories. And I have to tell you, I read around 5 books a week, and I don't see where you got this from watching a movie. Like, when you say that, it kind of blows my mind, because you've created an entire mythology here. Do you think that's part of the reason it took so long to get it all where you wanted it to be? Because you were actually constructing an entire mythology.
Well, I didn't actually come with come up with Rafin as he is until about 2008. Like I said, it was more just a general idea, and I had different backgrounds, different powers, all different kinds of stuff up until 2008, and then it all kind of solidified at that point, and I went, I'm going to go a different direction with this. But as for the mythology, I just kind of put things together. I mean, it's like, okay, well, why is he like this? Well, what would make him like this? What would be so, you know, impacting in his life that he would totally turn a different way than everybody else, or that he's expected to turn? So.
But you demonstrate that, like, okay, let's just say this, if I can, and if I insult you, you can always just curse me out, because that would be a first on the show, and I'm hoping one day it happens. That said, it's going to be difficult because I love every author that comes on the show, every aspiring author as well. I think that Rafin is almost, the way that you put that and the way that it's written, he's expected to be a bad guy. It's kind of like, okay, the girl who's in a trailer park is sometimes expected to have 15 children by the time she's 28 and be on welfare and have no teeth if she lives in Kentucky or Missouri, both states I've lived in, and I have all my teeth, thank you very much. You take a character who's almost stereotypically supposed to be something. He's supposed to be a bad guy. His looks imply it, the fact that he happens to have sharp fangs, right? Not fangs, like talon-like claws.
Yeah, he has claws and long nails.
Yep. Yeah, he has charcoal skin, you know, and he's living on Earth. I'm not sure how much you want to tease this novel. I'm never sure how much I should reveal. But I have to say, this character is a living, breathing character who's down on himself because of what he's expected to be, because of the fear that other people have. It would be kind of like if someone looked just like Satan walking around the earth today. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's kind of a, yeah, definitely. Halloween, he definitely would fit in Halloween. he would win first prize for contest just walking around.
But here's where you blow my mind again, because he's not a demon. He's not of this earth.
Well, I didn't, like I said, I was just trying to, and I grew up on Star Trek, so I mean, I absolutely loved the alien idea and everything like that, and they had all different kinds of aliens with both, you know, the original and the next generation, and so I went, you know, there's so much more possibilities through the alien thing, because I mean, it's out there, it's pretty limitless what you can come up with in that aspect. With everything else, it's kind of a typical, you know, you go with angels or whatever, you go with wings, you go with these different characteristics. I wanted to kind of craft something new and unique, and as I started working on him, just different traits, different possibilities.
And you nailed it. Not only did you nail it, but I have to tell you, because he's 18, isn't he? In the book?
Yeah, he had just turned 18
when we meet him.
Right. I think he's about a week or 2 weeks into 18. So.
Right. So he's, I mean, what I think is kind of profoundly incredible is that you managed to really exemplify, because I'm an X-Men fan. I don't know if you're a comic book geek or not.
Me too. Yes, I love
Trek
it. Wolverine.
Myself. So a Star Trek, Star Wars, all of that, I'm into that. And I have to say, one of the things that struck me is it's not just that he's unique, totally unique, never been done before. This is not your typical alien. I mean, I think you can go in so many directions with aliens, and I think anyone who thinks there's any sort of a stereotypical alien is just dead wrong. Because you went in a different direction. He's just turned 18, and the beautiful thing that you've snuck in there, and I don't know whether you thought about this or not, but as a reader, I appreciated the fact that here is a boy, a young man, who's just turned 18, and he does feel alienated. and I, no pun intended, Nicole, don't get after me, no pun intended, but he does feel alienated, and that reminded me of, well, being 18, when you do feel alienated. Was that by accident that that creeped in there, or design?
No, I think more by design, because we all feel kind of like we don't belong at that age and everything like that. And if you're going to stick true to the teenage theme, you know, you have to definitely touch on that, if not, you know, have it lived through the character, because you're very, I mean, and even, you know, kids who look more grown up, you still feel that awkward phase, like you haven't quite found your place in the world yet. I mean, you know, you're supposed to be an adult because you're 18, you've turned over and you can vote, you know, and all this stuff, and but yet, you know, you're not quite ready, and it's an in-between stage where you don't know what you want to do with your life or anything else. So I really tried to keep that theme, and he's got an extra layer to that because he has to keep himself hidden, or at least his true self hidden, most of his life.
Right, and you know what, though? I think you upped the ante with that. I mean, I think you made it deeply symbolic in that he kind of, if he doesn't take pills that allow him to blend in, this is a young man who's going to high school here on Earth. If he doesn't take those pills, you know, he has, many times throughout the book, he kind of looks at himself in that way I think is very authentic for boys and girls alike, or young men and women alike, in that he looks at his exterior and he doesn't think it's good enough. He worries constantly about himself, about what he might turn into. And that's the unique part, because I think you have so many universal themes with being a teenager. And, oh, can we just talk about Ari, who happens to be a girl that he trips, they tangle up in a little jog at school, right? Out of nowhere.
Yes.
You work this in.
On
they
the track.
Trip over one another. He's not, he's someone who is a loner because he has to be a loner.
Yes.
And he trips, literally, I mean, he has the grace factor I do. Okay, he just does. He tangles up with this girl, and they start a very unlikely friendship. I thought that was, first of all, how you introduced everything. I suspended disbelief. There was no disbelief. I was in this story with these two people. And you did it in such a short amount of time that I immediately liked Ari. I thought she was funny. I thought she was authentic. I liked the fact that she is strong. She does not need anyone to save her. And indeed, as the book rolls on, you see that strength in her. But here's my big thing. How on earth did you manage to be, I have five sons, okay, and a husband. I swim in seas of testosterone. How on earth did you inhabit the character of Raven so authentically? Because it's amazing. How did you put yourself in that mindset?
It's the fact that, I mean, you know, we all have similar feelings. I mean, we're all human, guys, girls, everybody. We all have our nervousness. We all have our inconsistencies, quirks, things that we think aren't, you know, beautiful about ourselves, things that we worry about, you know, things we consider flaws, or, you know, traits that stand out that we can never get rid of. So I just kind of went off of that more than anything else, the human perspective, and everything, you know, kind of really gelled together with the emotions and everything else. And I just kept trying to think, well, how would I feel in this circumstance, you know, faced with this? How would I deal with it if I was actually standing there, you know, and all this different stuff? In some instances, you'd be afraid. In some instances, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror and go, oh, my gosh, my hair looks like that. And, yeah, you just kind of, you know, go with that. Keep trying to think, if you were actually faced with this in real life, what would you do?
But you managed to do that in a male voice. That's what I'm saying is exemplary here, because I don't know that I could inhabit a male voice, even though I do swim in seas of testosterone the way that you do. You inhabited, I mean, you made this a guy. This is a guy, because although he has all those same emotions, you know, young women are going to be talking more about what they look like. He does it every once in a while. So, I mean, that brings authenticity, I think, to his character that you just don't see much. And the other thing, like I said, I just absolutely adore the book. I don't want to give too much away. We can find this on Amazon right now. Is it also at Barnes & Noble? Where can we get this?
Yes, it's at barnesandnoble.com. It's on Amazon, and then it's also on Kobo and Smashwords. So, yeah, you can put
you
in my name in the title, and, yeah, with my name and Shadowborn, you can find it.
And that's not the only book in the series. You have more coming as well.
There should be four books in the series thus far. I have turned in three. I have number two I'm already editing on, and number three I submitted to see if they wanted to take it, and I should hear back about contract pretty soon.
That's amazing. How was that whole experience? Because you've had this story in your mind for so long, and then you came up in 2008 with the way you thought it should be. Are you a plotter then, someone who kind of has an outline, or are you more of a pantser?
No, I'm what they call a pantster just by nature. I write by the seat of my pants. I don't plan too much. I just kind of come up with ideas. I'll be in the grocery store and something will hit me, and I go, ooh, yeah, that's a good idea. I should make a note about that for later. So I just usually do that when it comes to the writing. And actually, you were talking about depth of characters and stuff. Originally, Shadowborn was a secondary book. I had written another book before, which I turned into the prequel, and it ended up, I shortened it down to 10,000 words, and it's the free prequel novella that you can get on Smashwords. It's called Shadows Rising. And so I had all the parental characters already mapped out. I had already done all their characteristics and stuff for the original book. And like you said, with Rafin not being a bad guy, I thought about making him a bad guy, a secondary bad guy, and I'm going, no, I've kind of already done that in with the first book. Let's do something else, you know, and go a different way, and what if he rebels against all this stuff, everything that's expected of him, you know, what if he wants nothing to do with it? This evil parent is going to look at, you know, or, you know, whatever you want, sire, alien, creator, he's going to look at him, and he's going to go, you know, you're terrible, I want nothing to do with you, and it's just, you know, that eternal rebellion thing is kind of where I got that idea.
He doesn't come off as rebellious at all, and in fact, you do one of the sneakiest little things I've come across, which is everything is up front. It just slays me because everything is up front. If you read Shadowborn, and by God, you should, if you read it, you're going to think, hey, Nicole is showing me everything I need to see right up front. I mean, it's amazing. Like I said, I don't want to reveal too much, but I have to say, you do not mess around. There are no, okay, we have to wait for the payoff. Do you know what I mean? Like, say Twilight. We had to wait until the payoff until that last kind of inexplicable book that Stephanie Meyer put out. And we did get a payoff. Maybe not everyone liked it. You don't do that. You're way sneakier than that. Okay? Because Ari and Rafin let's just say they have a connection, and you don't mess around with them cementing that connection in a way. You do not mess around with them becoming a couple. And how in the hell you managed to do it the way that you did, where I didn't even blink. I was like, makes perfect sense. I can't believe she did that. They're together. They're together right now. Oh, my God. Their boyfriend, their girlfriend. You did not mess around at all. Was that part of your strategy with the book?
Yeah, that was – I really wanted to just kind of jump in with both feet and everything like that. I totally agree with you. I've read a lot of books where they kind of hang on and stretch it out and stretch it out, and it's like, all right, already, are they going to end up together or not? And I kind of went through the manuscript when I originally wrote it was longer, and I went, you know what, no, I'm going to cut everything out that doesn't need to be here, that kind of holds the book back, and I'm just going to go straight through and see how quick and clean cut I could absolutely get it. And so I just kept all the major details that I had originally had and cut everything else. And so it just kind of moved along.
I'm just, everything, that's the sneakiness, because Nicole makes you believe it's all there. Oh, my God, they're actually together. I don't have to wait for this. But there are mitigating circumstances. There are circumstances that you can't deny that while they're together and they have the comfort that one another can give, as much, he's afraid of himself when he's with her. You know, I'm trying to tease this out, Nicole, so everybody runs out and buys the book because it's unbelievable in the best of ways. I mean, they're together. You don't mess about. They're together, but they can only be together in certain ways because of circumstances beyond Rafin's control.
Ari, right, because Rafin is dangerous to Ari.
Right, but she doesn't care. But she doesn't care, and I want to be very clear on this to our listeners. It's not a – okay, I'm going to try and be politically correct here. It doesn't suit me, but I'm going to try. Huh. If you've read Twilight, and a lot of people have read Twilight, this is no Twilight, and I mean that in a very good way, and I'm not slamming Twilight either because I ate it like popcorn, okay? It was like junk food to me. This is more like a gourmet 9-course meal. The reason I say that, because I have nothing against Twilight, but I do have a little something against Bella, okay? Ari is not Bella. She's got plenty of power of her own that could complicate, that could actually help Rafin. He doesn't want to take it because, let's just say that Ari's people look upon his face, and one of the reasons he has a complex about his appearance to some degrees is because their people look at him and think, oh, he is not someone that needs to be with my daughter. He's going to hurt her. He's going to hurt me. He's going to hurt every one of our population. All right? So that complicates matters.
He's one of the most hated races in the universe in the book. So, yeah, no, everybody looks at him immediately and knows. It's just kind of one of those things where he's dangerous as soon as you see him. Everybody, they don't like him. They know exactly what he is when they see him. And, yeah, everybody's like, no, stay away from that. So,
yeah, but I'm not letting go of the sneaky, okay? I'm not going to let go. I'm trying not to ruin anything, but to sketch out that's not even all of it. Not only do you have the parents and her family, but you have who she really is, and I'm not going to tell you who she really is because you're going to have to buy the book. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords. Get the book, Shadowborn, Nicole Camp. But you sneaky little devil, you. No offense to Rafin. Because then you throw a whole wrench in the works, and you do it in such a forthright way that let's just say when Rafin finds out what's really going on, I was just sailing along in the book going, wow, this is amazing. Everything that I read so often, she's almost deliberately, thrown gas on it and set it on fire. And it's great. It's addictively great. And then his mother has a little something to say about how he came to be. And, again, I'm not going to reveal everything, but you threw me for such a loop there. And I thought, oh, she's good. I never saw it coming. I had no idea. You didn't even foreshadow it. That's how clean that you made it, is that the reader, me, I was sailing along thinking, this is amazing. I never want this to end. And then you throw that in there, and I thought, my God. I mean, how do you even do that? I know that's not a question you can answer because it's not really a question, is it? But my admiration.
It is kind of a question, but more. My main thought with the whole theme of the series, especially as I got deeper into it, was nothing is as it seems. I just kept kind of going with that because, I mean, every story has a backstory or an underdimension that, you know, you don't see on the surface. There are just so many different layers and everything in life and the way things go. You know, like they talk about the 6 degrees of separation. You know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. Well, you end up walking into, you know, that sixth person. And, oh, yeah, I know such and such. So I went with that theme kind of, you know, to make it flow but yet totally bring an air of mystery to the book so that, you know, everything looks clean, like you said, on the surface and like it's on a silver platter, but it's not.
It's not even close to it. I just don't even know how you manage it, but I love it and I want some more. Do you know what I mean? Because you really did. I mean, you're talking about mystery, but I have to tell you, listeners, this is a, you think you're getting it all. You make somebody who could have been monstrous, and I'm so shocked to hear that Rafin could have been anything other than he was, which is a compliment on the character he became. I mean, this is someone who's fighting the good fight every day to be good. This is someone who is who doesn't even know his origin. He doesn't know where he comes from. And when he finds out, let's just say it doesn't necessarily make his self-esteem rise much, but he's not going to go down a certain path. And at the same time, you have an extremely, this is where it differs from Twilight and books on that kind of level. Ari's very okay with taking care of herself. She does not have a problem in taking care of herself. This is not a female character who needs a rescue at all. She knows what she wants. She's going to get it, and she's not real interested if Raven's telling her, no, I might hurt you. You have to understand, I might hurt you. She's like, yeah, right, we'll see about that. And she doesn't get hurt. And she's never vulnerable in the way that Raven sees her. And I think that is an extraordinary accomplishment on your part as an author, because all too often it goes the other way where they are kind of cowering, or and maybe authors have the best of intention with that, in that each has something the other lacks. But you managed for Ari to have things that Raven lacks and could use badly if he had them, right?
Right.
And you managed to make both of them very strong. Anything she does is of her own free will, and thank you very much. She'll kick his butt if he needs it. And this is despite
that,
the fact that
throughout the book.
It's amazing. I mean, she saves his bacon more than once, a lot more than once, and I just have such admiration for that, because it could have so easily gone the other way. But the layers you're talking about and the mystery you're talking about, I almost think there should be a new term. I'm not even lying to you. There should be a new term for what you did. I mean, I know I've called people's novels magic tricks, and I try not to do that very often, but this isn't a magic trick. It's a revelation. And I know you did not come on the show expecting to hear that, because I don't think I've said that to anyone before. There are marvelous authors who have been on the show, and I want to compliment each of them differently, because every book is a unique thing. But I think there should be a new term for what you did. And I don't know that mystery, I think that's too tame. Because literally, when you say it's simple and it's clean, it is simple, it's clean, it's forthright. And then you turn everything upside down and you do not blink your eyes as an author while you do it, while I'm sitting here rereading what you just wrote, because I can't believe it. I mean, that's the kind of feedback I expect you to continue to get, because what you did, it's not even a mystery. You don't make it a mystery. It's all out there in the open. Like you said, there are layers. And what's under the surface, anytime you think that you're getting ahead of the story, because I do this all the time, and a lot of times, and I think this is something you went for and accomplished hands down, a lot of times I get ahead of myself and I say, oh, well, I know where this is going next. I have to tell you, I tried to do that quite a few times while reading Shadowborn. It didn't happen. I mean, I gasp at more than a few places, particularly what his mother did and particularly who accompanied his mother. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I was like,
about.
What? Well, see, this is me. Okay, normally the show is not a total geek fest, but I'm telling you, you have to read Shadowborn to know what I'm talking about.
And I'm so glad that you couldn't predict ahead. No offense, but I'm really glad that it was a...
I would have never seen what happened. And then on the very last page, again, I'm not going to give anything away here, but let's just say that Nicole throws a wrench in the works that makes me as a reader salivate to know exactly where the mythology she's created, which is coming, which is here on Earth, where that's going to go. I don't want to give away too much, because it's absolutely amazing. Okay, look, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to tell you why, because I need to get myself in hand, because I seriously could sit and use this entire episode to say, Nicole, how on earth did you do that? Like, I would love to tear it apart and figure out how you made this so eminently readable. But that's geeking out, and you may have other agendas. So, everybody, we're going to be back in just a few minutes to let Nicole take over and me stop geeking out quite so much. And you know what? During the break, go buy Shadowborn. You can find it on Amazon. You can just Google Nicole Camp, and you'll find the book. And while you're at it, follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicole, N-I-C-O-L, Nicole Shadowbled. Follow her on Twitter. I'm going to geek out during the break so Nicole can blush crimson, if she's not doing that already. Everybody,
already
we will
doing
be right
that.
Back. There you go. We will be right back in just a few minutes right here on Lydia's Literary Lowdown.
Hello, everyone. Bea DeLozier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea DeLozier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. DeLozier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Orville Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at orvillebird.com and get a hold of all of Orville's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. If there was a bit of silence, it was me trying to grab myself by the hand and shake myself because Nicole refused to do it. No amount of bribing her with chocolate would make her entice her. But then again, she's the author of a brilliant book, so why would she want me to stop gushing about it? Okay, so Nicole, I have vowed to myself that I will take myself in hand and I will try and conduct what sounds like approaches might even bear the appearance of a legitimate interview. So, at this point, how did you get this book out there? You're with Entrance Publishing. So
yes.
How long...
I actually started querying it in 2012. And I wrote it in 2 weeks over Christmas in 2011. And I rewrote the whole thing. I had gone a different direction with it before in third person, and it just was too long. So I went, to heck with it, I'll do it for fun, and I rewrote it and cut everything out that didn't need to be in there and just sent it straight, you know, like you said, nice and clean as I could get it, and queried it. And it was, I believe, in April that I was on a writer's forum called AbsoluteWrite.com. And a lady I had been talking to for a while on the forum, she goes, oh, I'd like to see your book in print. And I'm going, oh, isn't that sweet? I'd like to see it, too. And a couple weeks later, finally, she goes, no, I'm an editor. I'd actually like to see it in print. Would you send me some pages? So I submitted to them, and I heard back probably, like, 7 hours later, I mean, they just absolutely went through it like you did, and I got a reply, and they wanted to offer me contract, and that's where that all began.
What was that whole process like? Like, when you realized that she really meant it, she wanted to see pages, and then she asked for the full. I mean, what was it a roller coaster? Because you seem like a really practical person to me. I cannot imagine you thinking, oh, yeah, they're going to get back with me in 7 hours.
No, I did not think they would get back. The quickest I've had is a couple days, usually in replies and rejection letters, and that's usually when they've decided right there and then, no, we don't want this. So, yeah, to hear back from them in 7 hours and get the email, and I went, I got it. Oh, my gosh, I got it. I was stunned when I got the email, and it was just, I was kind of euphoric, but I was definitely stunned into silence. So, I didn't jump or hoot like I thought I would. You know, you picture that moment of just absolute glee, and no, I was just really quiet, and I'm going, this is fantastic.
Yeah, but so, I mean, because it happened so quick, do you think there's a chance that maybe you were quiet because it was so freaking surreal?
Well, I figured it was a rejection letter when it came that quick, but
read it 4 or 5 times to actually get the intent?
No, I read it real quick and at first, because a lot of them, the rejection letters, I don't know if you've ever queried agents before, they thank you for submitting.
Oh, haven't I,
we
though.
Have read your
I
work
have.
And yeah, everything like that. And then, you know, then comes the polite rejection. So I was reading along the first 2 sentences, and then it said, congratulations, we would like to offer you contract. And I went, like I said, and then I just absolutely froze. So, no, that was what that was like. And like I said, I had been submitting it for about 4 months before that, and I had one agent take a bite, but they didn't end up taking me on. So I had kind of shelved the project. I figured, okay, well, what do I write next if this isn't going to do it? I kind of put everything I had into this one. Now what do I do? So anyway, yeah.
But that's a good question because, believe me, I'm going to be scooping up. And I, when we were in a green room, there is something I want to mention because if I felt this way, I think other readers might feel this way because your editor felt this way. Shadowborn is just so good, and you get – you're so on board with Raven. He's not even – he's just someone you like. You like his struggle because I think at some point or another we all have to struggle to be better than we are. Or we try, you know, the best of us try to be better than maybe we are, than certainly than other people sometimes see us when we're at our worst. So my thing was, you told me, okay, so the prequel is free on Smashwords, which is wonderful. Yeah. And I was like, man, I don't know if I want to read the prequel because you give us some of the backstory in the book.
So.
Yeah, well, I'm going to read it just because of this. Because in the green room, the reason you find out about a lot of brutality in Shadowborn, and you do a great job with it, but I'm cringing the whole time in a good way because it shows – it gives you the stakes. Shadowborn gives you the stakes. It gives you some of the history. It gives you some of the backstory. The prequel, however, even your editor was kind of like me in that she was like, man, I don't know if I can take it. But ultimately, she wound up saying it's not what I thought it was.
No, it wasn't overly brutal that she expected. It was definitely tense. There was definitely battle and stuff like that and turmoil. But she thought it would be a lot more, I think, gruesome and blunt and gory in terms of emotions than it was. So because it's I didn't want it to be, I didn't want to turn the reader away. So you have to have tolerable. I mean, it's a struggle, it's a battle and everything else. But I said it from the point of view of a character that I figured could, if this is a weird way to say it, could handle it. I mean, he handles it in Shadowborn. So I used his sense of humor and kind of his strength, and that's what I based the prequel on, in that sense of tone, you know, and voice, that he would be able to muddle through it and he would get by. And then
right,
we
and I wanted that. I wanted that on air because if I feel that way, and if an editor feels that way, I want that dispelled because I'm going to run and read it. That's the way it is. But it's good to know that myself and an editor are actually on the same page. It may never happen again, Nicole. But the whole thing is, so we've got the prequel, and we're going to have four of these books, which I'm going to devour each and every one of them. But what are you planning beyond that? Do you have any plans or any ideas kind of swimming around in your head that you might be exploring next?
Like I said, I am a true pantser. I have about at least 30 other drafts of other stories with other characters and different stuff that I just piddle around on and write on from time to time. Most of them are about 25,000 words right now. And I go back to them when I either have writer's block with Shadowborn series or when I, you know, decide I want to do something else for a while. And I go off with them and their characters and have a play day and just do whatever, you know, because there's no restrictions. I don't have to follow a plot in that instance, but yeah.
It's better than that because, see, that's exactly what I would want to hear. The worst thing I can ever think of is after having read Shadowborn and knowing that the prequel is not going to, you know, emotionally scar me for life. That's the power of your writing, though. I mean, have you ever looked at it from that perspective? I'm curious about that. Have you ever looked at it from the perspective of, hey, I did such a good job with Shadow. Oh, you probably didn't. You're probably nice and humble. You seem nice and humble. But I'm going to throw it at you like this. I mean, does it ever occur to you that an editor was actually dreading reading the book, the prequel, because of the job you did, the excellent job you did in Shadowborn?
I was surprised about that she was dreading it. But, yeah, I can see where she's coming from that.
But that's powerful writing. I mean, have you looked at it from that point of view? If you can evoke dread in a reader, my God, that's an author. That's someone you want to keep reading. You know, think of Cormac McCarthy's The Road, okay? That was
right.
It's not exactly light reading, okay? If you
and I saw the movie, not light at all.
Right, go on, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I didn't want to, I mean, it has to have elements of that because we know from the book that the history has battle. I mean, there definitely is struggle, there's strife, there's battle, there's even control and all that going on. And so there's lots of things in it, and so I had to touch on that. But yet you have to, you know, kind of have your lighter moments and stuff too. I mean, otherwise you're just going to absolutely go down with the character, and the character's going to go down and not recover. So
right,
you
have
to
do that, by the way. I want to be really clear. There are at no point in Shadowborn, I just must be clear here, at no point in Shadowborn did I say, this is too much and I can't go on. I mean, at no point does that happen, partially because you're seeing the history. Raven doesn't discover who he is or where he came from for a while. And by the time he does, you keep him in action, you keep the pace of the novel running forward, just full tilt running forward. You don't give your characters time to think, and I like that because it is in those moments we discover what each character is really made of. And again, at no point do you rely on stereotypes. When her family discovers who Raven really is, you know, they're furious because it puts her at danger because Raven can actually take energy, life force from Aerie. And if he takes enough, what happens to Aerie? Well, there is no more Aerie, okay? So obviously that's a huge conflict. And I like how Raven struggles with it, but he says, I'm better than this. I'm not going to take it. He tries to protect her, but, you know, she's a protective force herself. She knows when he's denying himself what he needs to kind of continue existing, let's put it that way. But you have more conflict with the family, and it didn't turn into a crutch, Nicole. I know I'm geeking out again, but I have to say this is another selling point of Shadowborn in that you could have used Aerie's entire family for the entire book to be this, oh, my God, we can never be together because their family, Romeo and Juliet, subtext. No offense to William Shakespeare, who I love, okay? And he's not alive, so he doesn't care what I say one way or another. I'm just saying you could have used the crutch of the family being a dividing factor. You didn't do that. They actually see him for who he really is, and they accept him, which is another thing that I don't think novelists do often enough. You look for, I don't want to say simple solutions, what I want to say is it's very realistic. It may be, you know, a book that's not necessarily always staying on Earth or characters that are from Earth at all, but you stay with the thing I admire the most, which is, did you ever say to yourself, this has to be realistic? This has to be realistic.
I tried to stay with the human element in that, you know, can you forgive this? You know, after all that's happened and everything else, in the worst of times or best of times, can you forgive this? When it's happening, after it's happened, when all is said and done, at all these various stages in that moment with that character, can you forgive this? So I kept trying to go along with that, too, and you know, humanistic and also along with all the skirmish and everything else.
Yeah, but there were no fake moments. I mean, there was nothing where my eyes rolled back into my head involuntarily. You did not do the too typically used, one of her family members is a bad guy who tries to sabotage Raven. It didn't work that way. You didn't even use the whenever they kind of make a visit to Aerie's homeworld. You didn't even use the, okay, one of his family members or one of the population is secretly trying to frame him for doing something. I mean, how many times have we seen that? So all the easy way outs you avoided. I mean, you must read a lot. You must watch a lot to have come up with such a unique plot. Because you say, oh, I saw this, I saw that. And you said, I thought I could put a different twist on it. But the fact of the matter is, to me as a reader, you avoided all of it altogether to make your very own framework. And that's...
Well, I'm so glad you think that. But, yes, I've heard many times from other writers that nothing is ever new. It just depends on the spin and the way that you write it. And so I'm so glad that, yes, that you're going that direction, that you know, that it comes off that way, because that is absolutely excellent.
Well, yeah, I just didn't see it. I mean, it's not something, you know, I've been reading since I was three, and I mean, there was nothing better even when I was a kid than to get a stack of books about as big as I was at that time, bring it home and read it. That never stopped, and I'm going to be 41 on November 1st. I accept cash, I accept credit cards, and I'll take a check if you show me proof of ID. I just want the audience to know that. That said, I've read a lot. And obviously you've read a lot and you've seen a lot, because what you do with Shadowborn has not been seen. And here's the amazing part. This is the beginning. It's just the beginning. You've got three more books to go. Do we have any idea, any word back on the second book? Because I'm not quite drooling, but I'm close to it to get my hands on the next
second
book.
Is already under contract. And they're telling me if we can pull it off with edits and stuff. It depends on how long edits take, probably in the spring of 2014 sometime.
No,
that's what they're telling me. It can change. It might be fall of 2014. It all depends on how much work it needs.
Yeah, well,
spelling, grammar, I'm horrible.
I'm telling you, I'm not asking. This is an order. I want it out in spring, okay? I know Entranced is not going to listen to me, and that's okay, but the readers want it. They really, really want it. And you know, it's just amazing also, because in the green room, you talked about the fact that they need pages of backstory, because you ignore no character. In other words, you were telling me even the minor characters have their stories, and the editors needed those.
Yeah, Axon and Wasson are some of the alien minor characters, the doctor and the captain of the guard. I mean, I've kind of plotted out their childhood history with some of the other major characters and all different kinds of stuff, and even Rafin's parents, I have them, their histories all plotted out, and back to their parents and what they did in their lives and stuff. So, you know, loosely I add details as I go as needed, more so, but I have a basic storyline for all of them, some of which is revealed in Shadowborn. Not all of it, but some of it. But yes, I have a working knowledge of who they are, where they came from, why they do what they do. It's important.
You know, that reminds me of the greats. It reminds me of J.K. Rowling. It reminds me of Tolkien. It reminds me of the greats, and it gives me something to look forward to, because I know if you're that detailed with just minor characters, then they're real characters. You know, there are no fake characters or two-dimensional characters. And it also tells me that, hey, if you've even got the histories on the minor characters, this is going to be a sprawling series. Are you sure it's going to be four? Are you positive? Do you have that last sentence kind of written
well,
in your
head? You will kind of like this idea, because book number two is comprised of characters from other novels I wrote. So I looked at this and I went, ooh, such and such would fit really good in here. Okay, I'm going to use them. And I actually kind of culled characters from other series that I have, other novels that I've written. So the publisher had told me eventually if I get them finished, I guess those are called spin-off novels.
Yes, they are, and I love them. I eat those. I eat those like freaking candy. Have you seen me? I eat a lot of candy, okay? I do. And, you know, oddly enough, you write in a totally different genre, but I got into that when I was reading Maud Binchy, because she would have books where there were characters who had been mentioned in other books, right, as kind of minor characters, and then they came to the forefront in others. I love that. It's a totally different way of viewing a world you know and love. So, yes, please, I'll take some of that. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of the, let's say, secondary characters that are going to be in Shadow Throne, that's book number two, they have their own and their main characters in their own novels. So which book,
because you've got three as well, and then there's four, so what are you actually working on now?
I had just finished writing three about 3 weeks ago and turned it in, and I was just about to start on four. So
is this going to help? Because, yes, I'm trying to metaphysically put a foot in your butt.
Well, I have actually four chapters already sporadically outlined for four. I have for about 6 or 8 months. I've been collecting things, writing down scenes that come to me and stuff like that. So it's not like a blank canvas. Just like book number three, when I actually started it, I had half the book kind of pieced together here and there. So, yeah, they...
Does anything ever happen that surprises you in the books?
Oh, constantly.
Is that the most fun?
It definitely is fun, especially in these later books, because I mean, everybody always, oh, you know, this and this and this. I kind of never know what they're going to say. I try and base off, you know, what they would be, what they would do from just all the backstory and everything else and thinking of the character as a whole. And things do come up, and we do get new characters that I didn't expect that kind of pop out of the woodwork and make themselves known. So, yes, definitely. It definitely, there are surprises. There are at least two in each book I've discovered.
Oh, you've already, yeah, well, there's more than that from my perspective. I can tell you that, young lady. And I'm looking forward to more. That's the best bit, is that you finish it and you want more, because you're an evil, evil, evil little vixen, aren't you? Because literally, it's like the last paragraph, something occurs to Raphan, and I was like, what? Would this better not be she just did that to me.
And I'm an afterthought kind of person, so that's where that came from, one of those oh shoot moments.
Yeah, but it's oh shoot, and then on the page it's like, what did she just do there? You know, always a good thing in my mind whenever you get to the last page and you're starting to turn the other page and then you realize there isn't another page and you want a dartboard and you want Nicole's face on it because you know you're going to have to wait to get the next one. But you know what? We don't have to wait because we can at least read the prequel, right? Where can
yes.
we find it? Is it only on Smashwords?
It's only on Smashwords currently, and if you find Shadowborn on Smashwords, it will also list Shadows Rising. Shadows Rising is the free prequel, or you can, yes, put the word in, or yes.
I mean, you're doing a whole blog tour, like, for the rest of this
yes,
month. On the 21st, you're going to be over with Diane Loftus, and the 23rd,
yes,
you're doing guest blog posts, you're doing giveaways, and... You know,
so you're getting compensation. You're getting prizes. And then also I'm revealing when I'm over with Stacey Nash on October 24th on her blog, I put up some of the Shadowbled art she's going to have. I've been painting my characters for fun. It's relaxing, and it kind of gives me another insight into them, staring them face to face, because they're about 1 foot by 2 foot large, so they're life size. And but the photos aren't. I had to size them down, of course, for the blog. But, yes, you'll get to see some, yes.
Wait just a minute, ma'am. Are you telling me that you can also draw?
I paint. I do watercolor. I dabble in it.
Okay, so not only did you craft an incredible book, but you can also paint. You know, there are times that I feel almost motivated to vomit on the show because of the sheer talent of my guest and the sheer force of my envy. This is another one of those moments, Nicole. Tell me, how does that make you feel?
No. The painting has been a lifelong thing. I've always liked to paint and dabbled in paint. The writing was a more recent development. But,
well, please
yeah.
keep, please, okay, please, you know, the painting, it's always there for you. I'm just going to say that. But the writing, I need more of the writing. I need more of
Writing's
the writing.
Less messy.
Okay, I don't care.
Much
I just need
messy.
More of the writing. Well, you know what? Say again. I'm known for
I
my
said the writing's much less much less messy, so I like the writing better because I don't have to clean up all the paint with the writing.
Well, I want more of the writing as soon as humanly possible, but I can get that by going on Smashwords, and you can follow Nicole. Remember, first of all, we're running out of time, so let me thank you so much for dealing with my sheer geekdom. I appreciate that, and I do hope, and I will be looking for you next spring, next fall, whenever the next book comes out. So thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you will join us again next year.
I will try. If you invite me back, I would love to be on your show again next year. And if everybody just follows me on Twitter, at Nicole Shadowbled, they can keep up with all the news, and there's links to my website and all kinds of fun stuff.
Definitely go there. Well, thank you again. Cannot wait to talk to you. You are absolutely invited back again. No doubt about it. Everybody, real quick, because we are almost out of time, next week is the last show until I go on hiatus, and we are going to have the wonderful Tina Moss and writer partner, authors of A Touch of Darkness, Yelena Kisale, and I hope I'm not murdering her name. We will have them on next week. Thanks so much for listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown here on WGGM.